Welcome to episode 13 of the Serious About Security podcast for Friday, August 3rd, 2012, brought to you by the Greater Lafayette Security Professionals Group, Secure Purdue, and the Center for Education and Research in Information Assurance and Security, or SIRIUS, at Purdue University. Let me introduce the hosts of today's podcast. I'm Preston Wiley, CISSP, CCNA.
This is Keith Watson, Research Engineer at SIRIUS.
And on this episode, we're going to have Shimon Modi, a biometric technology consultant, as a guest to answer questions about biometric security devices. For announcements today, the next Greater Lafayette Security Professionals meeting will be on August 9th at 11:30 a.m. Pascal Mounier will present information on trusted digital repositories. Please remember to bring your lunch. The Metasploit workshop that was canceled for July has been rescheduled for the meeting after that, which is on September 13th.
The schedule for the fall Serious Security Seminar is starting to fill up, and the first session will be held on August 22nd with Scott Anderson from Lockheed Martin presenting, and then on September 5th, Ed Lopez from Fortinet will be presenting. These seminars begin at 4:30 p.m. in Stewart Center, Room G52, and also shown on the Purdue channel in the Greater Lafayette area. These seminars are recorded and made available as podcasts and on YouTube. Information is available at the SIRIUS website, www.cerias.purdue.edu.
And in news today, we have two items. Opera was updated to 12.01 and 11.66 to correct five security issues on August 2nd. Google Chrome, the stable channel, was updated to version 21, which corrected six high vulnerabilities and one Linux-specific critical vulnerabilities, and that happened on July 31st.
So today, the podcast is going to be a little different. Instead of normally talking about articles, today we're going to have an interview, and our guest today is Shimon Modi. Shimon is a graduate of Purdue University and worked in the biometrics laboratory here at on campus, and was very involved with the work that we do at Sirius as well. And so we'd like to introduce Shimon today. So Shimon, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you, Keith and Preston, for inviting me to this episode of Serious About Security podcast. As Keith mentioned, I'm a former Purdue grad and was closely involved with Serious during my time at Purdue, and it's a special privilege to be here on this podcast. So my research interests are primarily focused on performance evaluation of biometric technologies, security analysis of biometric systems, and systems engineering for large-scale identity management using biometrics. As Keith also mentioned previously, I had worked for the biometrics lab at Purdue, and I also worked for the Center for Development of Advanced Computing in India as a visiting scientist, and I'm currently located in the DC region working on various identity management and information security projects. So that's all about me, and Keith and Preston, back to you.
Great. So we are proud to have you as not a former Purdue graduate, but a current. We don't like to dissociate from our successful students. So we wanted to have you on to talk about biometric technology, and you are the guy for that. So let's start off with a question which is related to the deployment of biometric technology. We've heard over the years that biometrics would solve quite a few of the physical and logical security issues of an organization, yet not too many commercial organizations have deployed these devices. Is there a specific reason as to why that happens?
Well, Keith, that's a very good question. And I wouldn't say there's a specific reason for biometric technologies not hitting a large-scale adoption yet. There are several reasons. The main one that I believe is that biometric technologies have had a hard time managing consumer expectations about its capabilities. Ever since biometric technologies have come into public awareness, The expectations of the technology are that it is a silver bullet and it can solve all identity management issues. And that is just not the case. And I believe in some respects, the biometrics industry itself has not done itself any favors by essentially not trying to disagree with these expectations. Although I would say that several organizations have deployed biometric technologies over the last decade, and actually PEFQ, the Purdue Employees Federal Credit Union on campus, is a prime example of that. It was indeed the very first financial institution in the U.S. to use fingerprint recognition as a replacement for ATM cards. Now, although the technology itself works really well in terms of its performance and its efficacy, one of the other issues it has had is with user experience. And this also requires a little bit more background information about the biometrics market itself. Right now, over 50% of the market is captured by fingerprint recognition, which is itself a contact technology. And research, if you were to look at over the last 5 years, has been more focused on the user experience side of the system, which is how do you improve the final experience of the user, and how do you design the systems to be more intuitive? And we are seeing a positive impact of this research with the number of commercial deployments that have happened in the last couple of years, especially in South America and Asia, which have been the forerunners in deploying biometrics at more of a commercial and a private level. The U.S. and Western Europe have always led in terms of using biometrics more for government usage. Also, I'm not sure how many of your listeners will be aware of this, but Apple just bought a biometrics company, specifically a fingerprint recognition company called Authentic. And this could turn out to be a watershed moment if Apple is successful in integrating fingerprint sensors into its products. That is what has been missing for biometrics to reach large-scale adoption, is for it to be tightly integrated into consumer electronics and for it to replace password as identity management, and also to provide other benefits in terms of customizing user experience based on who is using the product.
And very interesting. So kind of as a follow-up question, you talked about kind of the integration of these sensors into products. Clearly, it's not a cost issue, is it? I mean, these devices are fairly inexpensive. Is it more of an integration issue and a customer expectation issue, do you think? So I can put a fingerprint sensor on a computing device. The cost is not significant. It's more of how do we appropriately use that? How do we tie it into the right software? And how do we get users to actually enable it? Or is it one of those things that needs to be enabled by default, do you think?
So in terms of the cost factor, the industry overcame that issue quite a few years ago. The cost has been reduced purely because of economies of scale. And that is more of a cyclical question in terms of how do you reduce cost? Well, if you produce enough units, you'll bring the cost down. Again, the question, the follow-up question and the answer to that is related with user experience. HP and I believe a few other laptop vendors started integrating fingerprint sensors into their laptops as an enhancement to replace passwords with fingerprints. One of the main issues that would come up from end users is that it doesn't work every time. And if users have a hard time using the device more than two times in a row, they are very unlikely to use that particular solution again. So one of the main issues that that consumer electronic producers can at least try and address is make the devices more intuitive to use, provide some kind of training, and like you suggested, if it's on by default, and if they end up having a good experience the first time, chances are very high that they'll end up using that particular technology in other devices as well. So it would be a win-win all the way around.
Okay. Well, I have a question. In the last month or so, we've seen a lot of companies basically leaking passwords and such like that. And in this scenario, you know, they recommend you change your password. But in the field of biometrics, you can't really change your fingerprint or your face or whatever. Are there protections out there to prevent this from being a problem? And what are organizations doing about this?
So this is another classic question that biometrics has had to face from day one. And this specific concern is particularly relevant if the biometric sample, as it is captured from the sensor, is stored in its raw format. So for example, if you're storing the digital image of the fingerprint or the face image in its raw format, that can then lead to replay attacks if the data is stolen or if the data is leaked. So there are several techniques to mitigate against such attacks. First of all, these biometric sensors, at least the more higher end ones, come equipped with liveness detection to ensure that the samples are only being captured from a live subject. So in this, if the sensors have liveness detection, then the spoofing attack, I wouldn't say is impossible, but the level of effort required becomes that much more for an attacker to be successful. So there are a lot of vendors out there who do provide liveness detection as part of the solution, and that should be turned on by default, especially if the system is unsupervised. That is, if the system interaction with the user is going to happen in a remote location without any kind of human supervision. Second, the captured sample should never be stored in its raw format. So the biometric systems should store the data in what is called template format, which is a representation of the features of interest. So this offers multiple advantages. The template format is much smaller in size, and it's extremely difficult to reverse the template to retrieve the raw sample. And lastly, the biometric credentials itself should not be treated any differently than passwords when centrally stored. So proper encryption techniques, which is exactly what is used with strong authentication systems which use passwords, should be applied to biometrics as well. Now, there are several research initiatives which are exploring the use of what we call biometric encryption. So the idea here is to combine a biometric template with helper data so that the biometric data itself is useless without the helper data. And to apply the analogy of changing your password at regular intervals, if you change the helper data in the biometric encryption scheme, you essentially end up with a new unique representation which leverages your biometric data. So you could essentially apply the idea of changing your biometric credential every 90 days or every 120 days by asking the user to change the helper data. Now, obviously, this particular idea is still in its in the research phase. And if you're interested, you should look up the Turbine project, which was funded by the European Union Science Council. And this project came to a conclusion last year, but they have published several papers and working models of how biometric encryption can be used in large-scale systems. So again, if you go onto Google and type in Turbine and biometrics, you should be able to go to that particular web page.
So is this, in a sense, when you say a user needs to update their biometric helper data, is that, in a sense, almost like an enrollment process again, or is that something else?
So this could be treated very much like a modified enrollment process, where the user would not have to provide their biometric sample again. essentially this helper data, which could be a password or some kind of a random string, which is generated automatically by the system, would then create a new registration template. Depending on how involved do you want the user to be, you could ask the user to provide a new biometric sample or just reuse the old biometric sample. But to add to your question, the best practice should be that the user provides a new biometric sample whenever they are recreating this registration template.
Okay, but this is all still research at this point, and we're trying to determine the efficacy of doing it that way. And there aren't any systems that commercial systems yet that are using this technique, I assume.
Not currently. So currently the closest that biometric systems come to using such a technique is more to do with perturbation of the actual data itself, and then storing the technique of how the data was manipulated as a separate function. So it's not as secure, but it provides at least some additional level of security against any kind of replay attacks or data leakage.
Very interesting. So another question that often comes up with a lot of users from the general population point of view is that they have a certain amount of fear, if you will, from biometric devices. And it's not helped in the sense that when biometric devices are used by, let's say, a government agency to identify members from the population to provide government services, for example, there's some fear of privacy. There's also, depending on the device, there can be concern over cleanliness, disease transmission, that sort of thing. What are some ways in which organizations can kind of alleviate some of that fear when they're asking their users or people that they serve in some way to use these devices?
Sure, and this is an excellent question because both the issues that you raised are currently the biggest barriers to large-scale adoption of biometric technologies. Let me address the hygiene and the cleanliness question first. So hygiene is definitely a very big concern, especially among contact biometric technologies like fingerprint recognition and hand recognition. So the solution to allaying end-user concerns is both a mixture of technology and user awareness or education initiatives. From a technology standpoint, there needs to be a cleaning process for the touch surface, which does not have a detrimental impact on the sensor. So the U.S. Visit, which currently is the biometric identification program that collects fingerprint and face data from all users or from all visitors entering the U.S., what they have done is they remove a transparent film from the fingerprint sensors at regular intervals. So this not only takes care of the dirt and the grime that gets deposited on the surface as people use the device over and over again, but it also is supposed to help in reducing any latent fingerprints being captured as part of the live sample. So your latent fingerprints essentially would be the residual fingerprint images from a previous user. Another simple process which has been tried with fingerprint deployments is to provide users with hand sanitizers, but care should be taken that such processes do not affect deployments because hand sanitizers have alcohol in it, which tend to dry the skin. And when you're using fingerprint recognition systems, dry skin typically leads to a degradation in performance. So from a best practice standpoint, you could provide hand sanitizers after the user has used the device. There are There are also other efforts on hand which are looking at antibacterial surfaces to be used on the contact surface. So, for example, hand recognition right now uses an antibacterial surface when the user touches the surface of the hand recognition system. The surface itself is coated with this antibacterial film. So there's obviously the technology component which can be looked at. There's also the educational component of the solution, which is about being realistic about using public devices. We do not think twice about touching a door handle, right? So from that perspective, educating end users can also help in demystifying the technology and help address some of the misconceptions about the technology. In fact, research done at done by the biometrics lab at Purdue University, and I believe this research was done sometime between 2006 and 2008, looked at this specific issue of hygiene and transfer of bacteria and germs from devices onto users' hands. And there were some very interesting results which showed that using some of these public devices is no different than touching a door handle on a door that is out there in the open. Now, with respect to privacy, which is a completely different dimension that is causing a lot of concern among end users, again, education can go a long way in helping users understand how these devices work. For example, a concern that always comes up with iris recognition is that the iris sensors is shooting lasers into the eyes, and which can then have a detrimental impact on the health of the eye. Well, the iris recognition system itself only uses a high resolution camera, which takes images using near infrared illumination. So in terms of how the technology works, it's completely different than how the end user perceives it to be. Again, media outlets and Hollywood has not done the industry any big favors with respect to depicting how these technologies work. Also with respect to privacy, there is the whole concern about policies and explaining to the end users what will happen with the data, how will it be used, and what control do they have over their biometric data. This is a field in which the industry has lagged, and a lot more work is required in order to either define this in an automated way so that it can be enforced by the system, or coming up with some standardized policy requirements which can soothe the fears of end users about what will happen with their data. Especially with respect to large-scale government systems, function creep is a very big concern. So Social Security being one of the prime examples of how function creep has really affected the whole notion of Social Security numbers. So the same issue happening with biometric data, which is essentially unique to an individual, is obviously a big concern for end users. And I believe clearly stated policies and finding automated ways of enforcing these policies is the right way to go.
Okay, well, I have another question. I've heard a lot of people say that biometric devices will essentially be the thing that replaces passwords. And I think that's kind of a dangerous statement to make, in that I think biometrics is supplementing passwords, and that, you know, we have a two-factor authentication approach where, you know, you have something you are, biometrics, and something you know, a password or even a card, something you have. Do you find that people implementing biometrics consider this this concept of two-factor authentication, or do you think that they just think of biometrics as just a replacement to passwords?
So, Preston, that's a very good philosophical question, and from For certain vendors, they would like to portray their technology as a replacement for passwords, because they essentially see themselves competing with that authentication methodology. But as a practitioner of information security principles, I totally agree with the idea of multi-factor authentication, and that the more levels of security you have, the harder it becomes for an attacker to break through the system. There is no system that is foolproof, and this is something that that practitioners and implementers have to try and put forth to the end clients in terms of what is it that you're trying to protect and what level of protection do you require. So to summarize, there needs to be a risk analysis approach taken to the identification technologies themselves. And sometimes biometrics is not the best solution. And in those cases, even though I am a big proponent of biometric technologies, I don't believe in trying to fit a square peg in a round hole.
Well, good. I think we all kind of agree with that. And it's always what context are in which you're using these, and what risk are you trying to protect against? So another question, which goes back to Black Hat, the conference last week, was regarding an iris scanner and a way to defeat that iris scanner. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what that was, the risks associated with this, and what you think the industry is likely to do to respond to these types of attacks. Obviously, we've known for a while that, you know, fingerprint sensors can sometimes be fooled, and this is another system that is being fooled. Is it an arms race in some sense?
So to actually address the first question with respect to the attack that was demonstrated at Black Hat, this is more of a theoretical attack which makes a lot of assumptions about the tools that are available to the attacker. So to summarize the attack, this is how it went. The attacker first has to have access to the biometric template that is stored. So the attacker would have to either break into the central server to get that data, or somehow capture it through some leakage process. The second step is to re-engineer from the biometric template and gain what is called the raw format, or the iris image. Now, obviously, this iris image will not be exactly the same as the original source. So what the researchers did was they had access to the matching algorithm. They would input the iris image into the algorithm and compare it against the stored registration. Depending on the actual outcome, which would essentially be a similarity score, they would then change the template a little bit, regenerate the iris image, and check if the regenerated iris image was closer to the original sample or not. And they went through about 20 of these cycles, as they describe in their paper, using genetic algorithms, to come up with a synthetic iris image which eventually passed and was similar enough to the original source. So not only did the researchers have access to the sample, they also had access to the matching algorithm, and the sensor that was used to capture the iris image was assumed to be to not have any liveness detection. So from a theoretical perspective, it does show some weaknesses in how the system was implemented, or how a system should not be implemented. As a best practice and as an implementation person, I would say one of the simplest mitigation techniques against such an attack is to not provide a similarity score to the end user, but only provide a yes or a no answer. So that if someone was trying to launch such an attack, they would not know how close they are to getting to the real answer. All they would get is a yes or a no. So does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. I think the other part was more of how do you think the industry is likely to respond to these attacks, not just this one in particular, but how do you think the industry has done in the past, like attacks against fingerprint sensors, for example? What's the response typically been? Has it been more of a technological approach, such as liveness detection or increasing the amount of samples taken, minutiae as part of the sample, anything like that that has solved some of these attacks, or is this going to be a continuous arms race, do you think?
I believe with all security systems, this will be a perpetual arms race. But the industry, to its credit, has responded quite quickly whenever such an attack has been shown. So, with respect to spoofing attacks, where an attacker is trying to provide a fake sample, liveness detection is the best way forward, and more biometric vendors are starting to incorporate liveness detection into such devices. Also, again, you have to take a risk analysis approach, and if the impact of such an attack could be quite large, such a system should be used in a supervised under a supervised environment. So it is both a technology as well as an administrative or a management issue. And I don't believe that this can be solved using only one approach. It has to be a comprehensive technology plus management solution.
Great. So I had two questions left, but I'm going to kind of combine them since we're running low on time here. So you're doing consulting work now. Can you describe a little bit about what your customers are looking to do with biometrics, and kind of if an organization is looking at a biometric solution, what steps do you think they should take to figure out, first, if biometrics solves their problem, and then what steps they need to take to make sure they implement it correctly or choose the right technology and implement it correctly?
Sure. So in terms of the biometric projects that I have personally been involved with, there have been two main solutions that the clients have been trying to solve. One is trying to identify duplicate identities in the system. So for example, if there's a welfare disbursement program being run by the state or a local government, they want to make sure that the welfare is not being is first of all not being provided to fraudulent users or users who have established multiple identities in their databases. The second solution that end users are normally looking for is to find some way of streamlining their authentication process so that not only are they reducing the number of calls to the help desk, for example, people having forgotten their passwords, but they're also providing strong authentication along with it. But in terms of if a particular client should be using biometric technologies or not, I always like to take a risk analysis approach to it. Again, try and identify the assets that would be exposed to an attacker, and is the cost of deploying such a solution worth the benefits that it will provide. But more from a purely biometric implementation point of view, you first of all need to figure out what is the demographic of your user base. As in, are you looking at a user base that is quite diverse in age? Is your user base quite diverse in its gender gender distribution that can help you decide if you should use a biometric technology, and if you decide to use one, which specific one should you use. The second big concern is, are you going to store the data in a centralized database, or are you going to provide a smart card to the end user? Again, organizations have their own approach to it. Obviously, smart cards provide a higher sense of ownership for the end user, but end users tend to lose cards, which can then lead to a higher recurring cost. The other big question to consider is the system going to be a supervised system or an unsupervised system? Again, if you're looking at it more from a commercial organization perspective, it will most likely be an unsupervised system, whereas government solutions typically tend to be supervised solutions. And then there are several more, but one of the other big ones to consider is having a clearly outlined policy about who is going to be the owner of the data, how long will it be used, and what kind of steps will be taken to either destroy or archive the data once the user leaves the organization. So this too has to be clearly identified as part of the system deployment.
Very interesting. I suppose we could probably talk about biometrics all day long. There's so many issues and so many interesting technologies out there right now. But unfortunately, we need to wrap up today. So I want to thank you, Shimon. And we've enjoyed having you on the podcast. And if you're interested in coming back sometime to talk a little bit more about that, we'd look forward to doing that.
Well, thank you, Keith and Preston. I truly enjoyed this opportunity, and anything that I can do to spread the word of biometrics and help people understand its true advantages and its true disadvantages as well. It's not a silver bullet, as I mentioned. I would truly enjoy that opportunity. Thank you again for having me on allowing me to speak about biometrics.
Great. We were glad you were here.
All right. Well, I wanted to thank Keith Watson and our guest Shimon Modi, as well as Sirius and Secure Purdue. I'm Preston Wiley. Have a safe and secure day.